The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, yes, today on the show, we're going to be breaking down the Giants and Eagles game from Thursday night. We're going to be talking about the ridiculousness of Saquon Barkley, who's to blame for what's going on with the Giants offense, the impact of the return of Olivier Vernon, and the Giants' other defensive struggles. So let's get to it. Hello, and welcome to the Big Blue View podcast, brought to you by SB Nation and Vox Media. I am Dan Pizzuta. I am joined here by Chris Flum. And we are going to, unfortunately, talk about the Thursday night football game between the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles, where the Giants lost 34-13. Did not look particularly good at
anything,
literally any point in the game. Yeah. So yeah, I think that about sums it up. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week. That's good, right? We can stop there.
You know, we probably should. Although, you know, maybe we should go back and re-record and say instead of the New York Giants, the New York Saquons, because that's basically what we saw.
Yeah, that was it. That was the only hope in this game, was Saquon Barkley. So, I mean, and he had 13 carries for 130 yards and a touchdown, 9 receptions on 12 targets for 99 yards. He was it. And I think we've kind of talked about how Barkley has gotten some volume. He's got some highlight plays. You know, he still only had 40% success rate rushing, but there were huge plays. And when those huge plays are the only things that the Giants had, I mean, that they really stand out.
They really, really do. And it was kind of, I don't know, I suppose funny to listen after the game and hear announcers and analysts compare him to, you know, Jerome Bettis and Barry Sanders and Jamal Charles and all of these guys. And that's because he is their entire offense and he is amazing. But my God, it's sad that's all there is to look forward to anymore when the Giants have the football. It's just, what will Saquon do next?
Yeah, and again, he was still super boomer bust in this game. He had 229 yards from scrimmage, and 151 of those came on 3 plays. So that's been the Saquon Barkley experience so far.
That's not him. That's this, well, I suppose we can call it an offensive line. That's the position they all play. And they just don't let him get any room to run with any kind of consistency. I have to give Will Hernandez credit from when he pulled over on that one big run and just crushed the Eagles defense on that side. Great block from Sterling Shepard, and then Barkley was off to the races.
Yeah, Hernandez had the real key pull there to open that first Barkley run.
But it does give you some hope for what he could do maybe on a more regular basis if they ever get the offensive line figured out in future years.
Sure, and I think that's the conversation right now, because We're going to try not to go into a full state of the Giants. We're going to try to do that early in the week, next week, because for some reason these Giants are playing again in primetime on Monday night. So the preview podcast next week is going to be pushed back again. So I think in the beginning of the week, we're going to come with a full kind of breakdown state of the Giants podcast. So we're going to try to stick to this game for now. But but I think with the offensive line and Barkley, that's the conversation that has to be had, because anyone who was against taking Barkley second overall, they weren't against Barkley. No one said Saquon Barkley is going to be bad. They said Saquon Barkley is not going to be put in a position where he's going to have the impact needed to help the team win games with the rest of the roster like it is. And I don't know how you can think anything other than that watching the Giants right now. Saquon Barkley is fun as hell to watch. Watching him break those three crazy runs, one was a screen pass. It's the most fun you could have watching the Giants right now. But in the overall state of the offense, it's not as helpful as it should be. And again, Barkley had a big game, but this was only his second game with positive expected points added as a rusher. It's part of a bigger conversation. He was great in this game. He was the only thing that was working in this game. But, I mean, that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and we'll get more into that when we start looking at the state of the Giants as a whole. So why don't we move on?
Yeah, so
unfortunately we have to talk about Odell again.
Yeah, that was another thing that kind of an extension of the game that wasn't really the game. And if you watch the Fox broadcast and you watch Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, it just kind of seemed like all game they were going after Beckham. And
well, Beckham drama sells. Even if there isn't any drama to be had, they will drum some up.
Sure, and some of the things, yeah, he can be criticized for. I mean, this is the second game he left the half early. They've said both times he's needed an IV, you know, whether the extent of that is true or not. I mean, whatever. Sure, if he's just leaving the field, whatever. But, like, I also don't think, like, we can't ignore the best this offense has looked was last week when Beckham got 14 targets. He was thrown at down the field early, thrown at down the field often. And like, he's not wrong on things that he's said, but he, again, wasn't really used well in this game. You know, he had 10 targets. A lot of those came in the second half when this game was just completely out of hand already.
They probably should have been mercy ruled.
Yeah. And you sent over the next gen stats route chart to me. And if you can go and look at the routes Beckham was targeted on, three of them came further than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. So many of them are little outs and slants and wide receiver
crossing
screens,
routes,
which are the least efficient route a wide receiver can run.
As we speak now, I don't know that it's up yet, but that is included on the weekly post-game stats and snap counts post. So people can go on and take a look at that and see it. My first reaction to that when I actually went and looked at it was barf. It was just ugly. That is not how you're supposed to use Odell Beckham. And my second reaction was, okay, there's plenty of criticism to be had for Eli Manning and the way he played. But when Beckham is running basically 3 and 5 yard routes, Shurmur can scream about getting the ball downfield all he wants. If his best player is staying at the line of scrimmage, or his best receiver anyway, that's the way that offense was schemed and designed. That's not Eli not deciding to throw to Beckham down the field. That's Beckham not being schemed to run down the field.
That's definitely a point that should be made. And I wrote this article after, like, week two. The headline was, "No one is blameless for the Giants' struggles." The subheading was, "Except Odell." But maybe we can throw that. Maybe there is truly no one right now. Yeah. When you look at this game, especially, and then look back at past games, the second something starts to go wrong, the whole entire offense crumbles. It's back to short passes. It's back to, you know, not scheming anything downfield, back to not throwing anything downfield. And then, you know, when Shurmur comes out at these press conferences and said, well, we had some calls and they were playing a defense and they were playing a soft zone and that kind of stopped us. Like, man, that's kind of your job, though. Like, that was the point of you being the offensive coach they hired, was to not just be stopped by a soft zone. Like, that should not be impeding an offensive head coach in 2018 from doing what you want to do on offense. And if you can't do that, then, like, what would you say you do here?
It's so bad we are going to references.
Yeah, we could talk about, I mean, Odell, we can talk about Shurmur. I mean, we have to talk about Eli. From the second play from scrimmage in this game, I don't know what Eli is thinking. Throwing the ball to Scott Simonson. Next Gen Stats had this at 0.53 yards of separation. And that's not the type of hole you want to try to be hitting like 4 yards down the field. The linebacker made an easy break to it and popped it up. Like, you can say that was a deflected interception, but yeah, it was deflected by a defender who was easily able to charge in and break it up. That's especially a pass on second and two. That's a ball that cannot be thrown.
No. And just all of those short passes. You know, I was looking at it. Manning's intended air yards, 5.8. His completed air yards was 2.4. And his average pass was 3.4 yards short of the sticks. I mean, how do you... I'm not even sure how we go from him throwing 10 yards down the field to 5 yards down the field in 5 days.
Right. Yeah, it's a question that needs to be answered, but that probably
will never be.
Probably won't be. Yeah. So, I mean, you can blame the offensive line, and a lot of people are going to do that. But as much as we talk about the Giants and the people who are listening to us now follow the Giants, and how much is talked about the Giants offensive line, there are worse offensive lines in the league.
There are. This wasn't even their worst performance.
Right. So there were, heading into this week, there were still 5 offensive lines that have given up pressure at a higher rate than the Giants. And not all of those offenses are completely useless when pressure comes. We can talk about Seattle all the time with Russell Wilson. Josh Rosen already is seeing pressure on like 44% of his dropbacks. And, you know, Arizona hasn't been great, but he's still been able to do some things. Houston is also a schemed mess, but you have Deshaun Watson who can, you know, make some things happen, and he throws downfield all the time. It all goes together. And in this game, I mean, the Giants were under pressure. Eli got hit 13 times. That's something you never want your quarterback to do. But, like, also, that shouldn't be something that completely derails the offense.
From the second play.
Yeah, from the second play, and they're playing behind, and there's ways to scheme around it.
Yeah.
Go empty. Let Barkley be in the slot. It's just... That'll freeze up some of the pass rush. You know, you can do things. Run play action more. You don't have to have a good run game to have play action.
No, and they can even look at their own tape and see this. Eli was under more pressure against Houston. You know, as good as Fletcher Cox was, he didn't have a game anything like J.J. Watt had. And Eli was still averaging almost 10 yards a pass, and they were moving the ball down the field. Granted, not like they did against Carolina, but they were at least completing the passes 5 yards or more.
You can talk about how the offensive line rushes some of the passes, but overall, the passes just weren't good. So I think we've talked about this stat before, but Next Gen Stats has expected completion percentage, which... they have all the tracking data of players on the field. So It takes into account where defenders are in relation to the quarterback, where the ball is thrown on the field, where defenders are in relation to the wide receiver, and then it comes up with how often you can expect that pass to be completed. On Thursday night, Eli had an expected completion percentage of 67.5. His actual completion percentage was 55.8. So that's an 11.7% difference. That is awful.
It really
is. Regardless of the offensive line, he's throwing these passes that are expected to be completed at that rate, and they're not. If we look at a full season right now, Eli was minus 11.7. For this season, the two worst quarterbacks were Tyrod Taylor is minus 13.2, Blaine Gabbert minus 16.7. Josh Allen right now is minus 8.3. So if you were picturing that in your head, Eli's expected completion percentage was somewhere around Josh Allen and the 2018 version of Tyrod Taylor, which is not the quarterback duo you want to be mimicking in any game.
No, that's... There really isn't much more we can say about the offense other than from just about every way we look at it except for Saquon putting on his cape and being amazing. It was just bad.
I think what we can take away here is Saquon Barkley is really good. We know that, but when your offensive philosophy is, hey, rookie, please go make a play. Please. Like, we really need it. That's not sustainable. They need to start getting Barkley into more situations where he can more easily make a play. They ran that screen for him, and that might have been maybe like the second or third screen like that they ran for him all year. They just need to be more creative to use what they have. We've heard all offseason, all regular season about the playmakers they have, but they're not putting them in position to win. And you can't just blame an offensive line and a quarterback for not being able to take care of that. Those are problems. Both of those problems need to be fixed, but there's problems that stretch further than that. And we saw that against the Eagles. It wasn't until like...
It was just before the half when they launched that deep ball to Cody Latimer.
Yes, that was actually the pass I wanted to talk about.
How'd it feel like?
It wasn't until like when they were already down 24-6 when they realized, hey, we should throw deep against Jalen Mills because that's what every other team has been doing so far against the Eagles. They didn't do that until they were already down by like three scores.
Even when
Jones was lost for the game the first half, they didn't even come out in 11 personnel to exploit whoever the nickel cornerback was who came in. They just wanted to keep running the ball. There's a lot of problems going on here. And we'll talk about what they mean for the future of the Giants in a later episode, but they really showed against the Eagles. It was a lot of things that are just, you know, stupid errors that they shouldn't be things that are derailing the offense right now. No. And they are. There are ways this can be fixed. I'm not saying this is going to be a top 10 offense the way it's constructed, but it doesn't have to look like this.
The Giants don't have to be the new Browns. They shouldn't be the new Browns.
No, and right now the Browns have a significantly better offense than the Giants do.
Well, that's because they've got Baker Mayfield, who is just amazing at football.
Oh, right.
And who can will a team to victory through sheer force of his own personality and greatness.
Yeah, well, the two of us who had...
The obvious and clear QB1.
Right, yeah. Well, the two
didn't
of us
agree with us.
Mayfield as QB1. The two of us talking about Baker is kind of preaching to our own little choir here. But both of us were big fans of him coming out. Yeah, I don't even know where we go. Yeah, so that's all we can say about the offense. Let's go over to the defense, which was also bad.
Yes. I had one bright spot.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
I don't know where your second one would be. But the one bright spot
I like the way B.J. Goodson played.
Okay.
I like watching him play and come downhill. He hasn't gotten a whole lot of opportunity to do that. They've really, Ray Armstrong has been the second inside linebacker, depending on the package, the money backer. And his snaps have come at the expense of B.J. Goodson, and I like watching Goodson play.
Yeah, I guess if we want to take another silver lining, I'm not totally sure if I'm as there on Goodson as you are. But I think the one objectively good thing we can talk about on this defense was the return of Olivier Vernon. Especially in the first half, he was in the backfield like almost every play.
It's been a while since we could say this, but Jason Peters was getting abused. And we haven't been able to say that since, I don't know, before Jason Pierre-Paul blew up his hand.
Peters was apparently nursing an injury coming into the game. He got re-injured during the game. That allowed Vernon to later go against Vitae, which is not
a good matchup for the Eagles.
That's not a matchup the Eagles wanted to have before this game. But yeah, Vernon was doing some things. He had that pressure on the play that eventually became a touchdown to Alshon Jeffery.
He even got a hand on Wentz.
Yeah, he did. I don't know how Wentz completed that ball. He rolled out to his right, threw back across his body to the middle of the field. So next gen stats, when we talk about expected completion percentage, that pass was expected to be completed just 18.2% of the time. So that was already the 12th least likely completion in the league this season. It's a little behind Eli's throw to Odell for the 33-yard touchdown last week. Yeah. But still, there's just an insane throw and play from Wentz there. But yeah,
I think the secret to that one was Alshon Jeffery recognizing the scramble basically immediately and getting a fair amount of separation. He had some more latitude to adjust to the ball than if he was actually properly covered.
We don't have the all-22 of that yet, but he was on the left side of the field running his route, and when he saw Wentz scrambling over to his right, he took off toward that side, and he was just basically in the middle of the end zone when Wentz was able to throw the pass to him. I mean, that's something you just can't defend. And again, that's a pass that's not expected to be completed at a very high rate, but it was. But then again, there were also quite a few passes that were expected to be completed and were against this Giants defense. I think one part we can look at is they picked on Eli Apple a lot. He had really good charting metrics through the first two games. But again, I was always a little weary of those because they came against Dante Moncrief and the collection of Dallas Cowboys receivers, which not a very valuable collection. No. And that's coming from someone who does really like Allen Hurns as a player. But yeah, so he had those two games and he was really good in those two games, but wasn't tested much. And man, they really went after him in this game. They were going against him, short passes, going in front of him. Nelson Agholor had that third down where it was another scramble drill, but he just, had one little false step that completely fooled Apple, and then he was able to go and ended up being a 58-yard gain on a 3rd-and-3. Yeah, so there are concerning things all across this defense right now.
Yeah, and I do have to give credit to the Eagles and how they used their tight ends and their 12 personnel package, stacking their tight ends, moving them around, splitting them out wide, and really scheming them open and scheming them into mismatches. So credit where credit's due there. But
yeah, that's something we talked about in the preview episode, of how they use their two tight ends, and their touchdown to Zach Ertz was that they came out originally in like a full house look. They had three players in the backfield. They motioned to a more traditional look with just one wide receiver out to the right. But Zach Ertz was the most outside person on the left of the formation, and he was still in line. But that set him up against Janoris Jenkins, and he, ran a route, and Ertz is so good at setting someone up for a double move, and he did that to Jenkins, who has been susceptible to that in his career, and he was wide open on that. So that just, so many good play designs from the Eagles in this game. And yeah, a lot of it went to the tight ends.
Yeah. So credit where credit's due there, but so much not good on the rest of the defense.
There was, talk about effort, and you don't want to do that while really like not knowing what's going on. But, and the Eagles were just, they were having their way, especially in the second half when things were really in hand. The Eagles never really took their foot off the gas, and they were 6 of 9 on third downs in the second half. You can't have that. We talked about, again, in other episodes, how the Giants had been really good on third down on offense and defense, but had struggled on first and second down, but how the first and second down is more predictive for future games, and we definitely saw that in this game. Giants struggled on third down, both sides of the ball.
They actually did convert a couple third downs on offense, so at least there's that. They haven't gone 3 weeks without converting a third down, but yeah.
Well, even those third downs were late. So they still only went 4 of 14.
Yeah, it's...
Well, let's not talk about the offense anymore. We're on the defense side.
At least not until next week.
It's still the...
Until we get into the state of the Giants, because then we'll have to, and we will have opinions. They will likely be strong.
Yeah, but still, on the defensive side of the ball, it's weird. So Aguilar had 3 receptions for 91 yards, but like none of those were like supposed to happen. So I think a potential missed turning point here was early in the game. Kareem Martin got a hand on Wentz, and the ball just kind of floated up. And Landon Collins was covering Zach Ertz, kind of came back to the ball, but because he was changing direction, couldn't really charge the ball. So he was just sitting there waiting for this interception to fall in his hands. And Aguilar just jumped in front of him, caught the ball, and gained 32 yards on a 3rd and 7. That could have been an interception.
It should have been an interception.
Yeah, that was from the Philly 17. So the Giants could have had it in the red zone, maybe right outside the red zone, depending on where Collins caught it. That could have completely flipped the game, but Aguilar just kind of came out of nowhere and caught the ball and kept running. The Eagles didn't score on that drive, but they still punted closer to midfield than it would have been. Even if that pass had fallen incomplete, they would have been punting from inside their own 20. And, worst case scenario for the Eagles, they would have turned it over and the Giants could have had the ball right around the 20. And, the game was within one score at that time. But the Giants punted on the next drive, and then the Eagles scored the touchdown, and it was just kind of out of hand from there.
Yeah, and that play in particular was frustrating because it looked like the Giants were, if I remember right, Landon Collins was the closest one, but there were two other defenders in the area and they were all playing it like it was a punt return. It almost looked like they didn't believe that the Eagles would be allowed to hit them or make a play on the ball.
Yeah, that was with Collins. That was my initial reaction, but then I went back and watched the play last night. He was out covering Ertz, and when the ball just kind of went up in a very unexpected way, he was kind of changing direction, so he wasn't really able to charge in.
Yeah,
I thought he should have, but after watching it again, he really just didn't, physics-wise, have the ability to do that. And so that's what left the opening there for Aguilar. And that could have been a real
game big changer.
Play in the game. Yeah, it could have been a game changer. And the Giants were definitely getting pressure early, and they got some pressure late, but the Eagles were always one step ahead. And that's something you see from an offense that knows what it's doing. They were able to get around it. They had plays that kind of used the Giants' pressure against them. They had routes that were able to get open downfield, and the Giants just kind of let them do it.
Yeah, that's... there's just not much more to say. There were basically two bright spots in Barkley and Vernon. Two not bad things in Cody Latimer getting deep and actually being used for what he is best at. And myself personally, I did like the way BJ Goodson played, and then other than that,
yeah,
I know I went to bed disgusted eventually.
eventually went to bed. These night games are kind of a killer, especially when we're both writing immediately afterward.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, I'm glad the writing happened afterward and this podcast did not, because that probably would have been something.
It probably would have been maybe a bit more entertaining for our listeners. But again, I'm saving that myself and letting it ferment until Monday or Tuesday, whenever we do that, do the State of the Giants.
We'll definitely do that. I don't think there's really anywhere else to go in this game. It's really just an embarrassing showing all the way around. There's really no other place to put it. This team is 1-5 now. Really no hope for anything, at least this season.
Good news, we've got some good college football games. And
yeah, guys, start watching some college football and getting yourself acquainted with some of those players.
Yeah, and this week can watch it without having to worry about what's going to go wrong on Sunday, because this time we got the bad news first.
Yeah, everyone, enjoy your Sunday. Have a nice day just watching Red Zone all day. Allow yourself to just sit down, watch all the other games, watch fun football. That's I'm excited for that. Yeah, everyone, enjoy your Sunday. You can also enjoy your Sunday next week, even though you're not going to be able to do that on Monday night. So we're gonna leave it there. Thank you guys for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast if you haven't. Literally anywhere you find podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, all those places. Please rate and review if you can. That would be great. Leave, you know, maybe 5 stars if you like us. Even if you don't, maybe do that too. Because of the weird week, because this was a Thursday game and the Giants don't play again till next Monday.
10 days.
Yeah. So we'll have some time. We'll be back early in the week to kind of do a State of the Giants breakdown. Then we'll be back, I guess, later in that week to preview the Monday night game against the Falcons. And yeah, that's it. So thanks for hanging out, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, I'm Anil Dash, and I'm the host of a new show called Function from the Vox Media Podcast Network and Glitch. This season, we're talking with experts about why our voting machines are so bad and how that might hurt our elections. We'll also talk with an animator to find out how popular dances from the real world end up in video games. And we're going to tackle the biggest question in tech. Why do so many celebrities use screenshots from that Apple Notes app to make their public apologies when they screw up? You can find new episodes of Function every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And thanks to Microsoft Azure for sponsoring Function.